Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. It is now time for Inside Matters Spiritual Talk Healing Dumb, right? Spiritual.
Spiritual Talk. How's everyone doing? Oh, I'm having a laid-back, peaceful day. I think we have an interesting show for you today. And, well, I couldn't wait to get it started. We're going to be talking about the masters in the new energy. We have a very dear friend of mine who will be a guest speaker today. Not only is she going to be a guest speaker today, but hopefully she'll be doing the third Sunday Inside Matters Talk with everyone. And I feel she has a lot of precious, interesting, spiritual tidbits to lay upon everyone. Before we get started, let me tell you about what's been going on with me. First of all, Ramadan Mubarak. To all the Muslims who are fasting for the month of Ramadan, we've gone through this every single year. We have our Ramadan just like we have our Christmas and our Easters and all our other spiritual holidays or religious holidays. Ramadan is no different, except that it follows the lunar cycle, so it's on a different day, at a different time, and a different season every year. And so we wish all the Muslims who are doing their spiritual fast a blessed Ramadan. I was revisiting some of the posts from the last show we had, and it was amazing how some of you are really, really, really conscious of me and my health these days. I remember saying in the last show that I was going to take a visit to Walmart. And so one of the listeners sent me an email and said to me, "You be careful going to that Walmart, do you hear?" And she was absolutely right. All I did was go down to Walmart and show another friend how to get there and decided I was going to stop in and pick up some beef, neck bones, and some alternative yogurt because I like the silk yogurt. And when I got down there, I saw all of those cars in that parking lot, and it just like boom, blew my mind. So I looked at her since she had that J&J shot, and I told her, "You going in there if you want to, but I'm not going in there." And everyone knows that I got my first shot. I got Moderna, and I'll get my next shot, not this Monday, but next Monday, I'll get my second shot of Moderna. And I've been noticing how everybody, well, not everyone, I can't say everyone because I can't speak for everyone, but there's so much of a fear consciousness out there, you know? I mean, that's all you see on the news. The news is talking about being afraid of this, being afraid of that. Johnson & Johnson gives you blood clots, but the news doesn't tell you that only 8 people out of what, a billion cell or a million cell people got the blood clot. So there's a fear culture out there. And it's sad, all the deaths that we're experiencing. We're living in a culture where, you know, guns are the thing. And I also heard on the news that if every person of color started going to the gun store to pick up some guns and to get a license to carry, that they would definitely begin to have some new laws in place because, see, then the fear culture would switch and flip over on to their side. I try not to be in that fear-based modality. Why? Because at my age, being afraid of things, well, it doesn't suit me. It doesn't suit me as an individual. It doesn't suit my spiritual energy. I was at a meeting the other day, and the topic was fear. And people talked about the things that caused them to be afraid, in this lifetime. And when it was my turn to speak, I feel like the oddball out because I had to share with them that not many things, I'm not afraid of many things, you know? I've always felt and believed from the time I was a little girl that I was divinely protected. And so I grew up with that kind of air about me, that protective shield around me, knowing that I was divinely protected. Now, I do have fear for other things outside of myself. I fear for the lives of my three sons that have to be out there in this angry climate. I fear for my grandson growing up. Well, I also fear for my granddaughters and what they have to be met with. I have a son up in Rhode Island, and I know the culture in Rhode Island, is especially in Newport, is not conducive to the safety of men of color or people of color. And I also have a son in California. I'm concerned about him, although California tends to be a state that's a little bit more liberal than other areas. And then I have the son that lives here in Virginia, and he lives right across the borderline, you know, to West Virginia, and he travels at night. He passes me every day on his way to work in the evening, well, in the morning, and he doesn't get home until 1 o'clock in the morning. So he's out there at night traveling on the highways and byways, and my heart is there with him, and I wish there was more I could do with him and for him. So I do have my own fear-based, fear-based collective feelings around certain individuals that I love dearly and everybody else's son and child out there, because I'm not out there. I'm not out there. So I don't have a fear for myself. I have a cautious way of protecting me from things, and I don't want to have to step to anybody because they seem to want to threaten me, and I'm just that arrogant that I will step back. So those are the things that I have to be concerned about, the fact that I stand my ground, and I do stand for me. I was listening to Kryon, and Kryon was talking about old energy beliefs and new energy beliefs. And it was fascinating that he had this sharing. And what he was sharing, in a sense, was that there's nothing that can prepare us for the amazing changes we are about to go through. There are many changes out there, a massive changes out there. My mother used to say, all things happen for a purpose. And if it wasn't the purpose for it happening, it would not be going on. And I firmly believe that as we go through these challenges, we are all evolving. And we all seem to know or believe or to wonder, what is our purpose on the face of this earth? And a lot of us feel that our purpose on the face of this earth is that of a 3D happening. My purpose is to be a teacher. My purpose is to be a philosopher. My purpose is to be an astronomer. But Kryon wasn't talking about what is your purpose on a 3D level. What is your soul's purpose? Let's talk about what is the soul's purpose on the face of this earth. And Kryon was of the thought that we are all existing on the face of this earth because we are a part of the creative source. And that's what we're all about. And what is the essence or energy of the creative source? The essence and the energy of that creative source is that of compassion, love, peace. And when you really get down to it, if you get down to the soul level, we are all complete, no matter what it is we're going through. There is a completeness in all of us. And I believe that we're evolving into that new human. As ugly as it looks out there, we're evolving into that new human, that new human that's tapped into its own DNA, its own innate existence, where we will begin to hear things differently. We're about to see things differently. And many of us who are old souls, we tend to really pretty much keep to ourselves because most people don't understand where we come from because they're still in that mindset of a collective angst. Not peace. Because the world's not peaceful. The earth's not peaceful. But it's being shaken up. It's being shaken up. And Mother Earth, like the Native Americans say, and Father Sky, they have a new energy that's coming about. Let me see. Let me share a little bit more, and then I'm going to let our speaker come in here in a bit, because I know everyone online is waiting for that moment. Okay, the creative source of our soul. These are 80% or more who believe in the afterlife. A lot of people believe in the afterlife, and they believe most, hopefully most, that the Creator is compassionate, is a compassionate energy, and the Creator does not judge. So why are we as human beings, we sit back and we judge everything? You know, mankind has made the concept of our Creator or the energy of creation as something to be feared. Although that's something that they believe in has given us the power and the essence of free will. So why when we exercise that free will, we think that we're to be punished for utilizing and exercising that free will? So these are things for us to contemplate, things for us to put our mindsets on, things for us to wonder about on occasion, you know? But the new energy that we're going into, this new energy that's cropping up all over the face of this earth, is meant for us to discover that which we are truly made of. And after we have our guest speaker, if I have time, I'm going to talk about masters in the new energy and how what we do is we discern, and then we decide what it is exactly we plan to do with who we are, what we are, and the real purpose of our existence on the face of this earth. Okay, family, with that, I'm going to open up the mic in a minute. And we're going to talk to my dear friend, Ifabayo Olumide Egunbunmi. And I'm hoping that she will be the person that takes on the third Sunday of the month for us. We fondly refer to her as Awo. She's a traditional African priest, and she's currently practicing Ifa priest
who spends her time helping communities of color recover from historical trauma. So I'm sure a lot of you will find this fascinating, this topic extremely fascinating. And before, so I can give her enough time, you know, to share with us, I'm going to open up her mic and I'm going to let her have the platform. Hello, Ifalayo.
Hello, hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me? Okay.
Absolutely. I've been listening to you all this time, smiling. Smiling in the void over here at you.
I don't know how you smile at me. Come on, tell us about yourself and let us know what it is you have to share with us.
Well, you've already pretty much said that I'm a practicing Ifa priest, which is a traditional earth-based religious tradition that actually looks at the world from a very spiritual lens. So we don't just see matter; we see atoms and the void of matter and things of that nature when we have to deal and do the work that we do. So we often actually engage in a lot of quantum physics, but people don't. So, which I find very interesting, because when I began speaking to people who work in quantum physics, and they began to sound very much like priests. So it was very interesting for me to have that kind of exchange with them. But we utilize ritual to heal people, to bring about the restoration of an alignment with people in relationship to their destinies or the agreements that they've made in heaven before they reincarnated here, to complete their tasks on earth before we return back to heaven. So really, in our tradition, we don't have a hell. We have a testing ground, which is earth. And so we come to do our job here, and if we don't complete the job, we come back. We reincarnate until we complete that job, and then we go on someplace else, or we go and sit at the feet of God. You know, our job really, when we come here as human beings, isn't just to remain human. It's to transform ourselves into Orisha, which is actually deities, you know. And so if we do that, if we become deities or enlightened, we remain in heaven. So that's a little bit about what I do and how I go about moving through life and everything. And so I was sitting around recently, and I was, in terms of today's conversation, thinking about the trial of Derek Chauvin in regards to George Floyd's murder. And I have been having conversations in passing with other people of color in regards to it. And sometimes people who are Caucasian, but very few Caucasians are speaking to me about it. They've been very muted in regards to the situation and the circumstance, which I found interesting. And so that's when I called you up. I just kept riding with it because I've been reading a lot of James Baldwin and watching his movie, I'm Not Your Negro, over and over again. I've watched it like 6 times. And found that in watching the movie, I could not help but to see the same patterns emerging in people of color communities that we've been battling here, I guess now for 400 years. And so I began to think about it because one of my coworkers in the office, I'm the only African-American in a municipal office. And one of my coworkers said, you know, he looks out and he sees things and he's so sad. He feels so disillusioned. He feels like there's no possibility of change, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I said to him, you know, I want you to watch the movie. I'm not sure. So he says, what can we do? As if I'm the great black spokesperson, right? I want you to watch the movie, I'm Not Your Negro by James Baldwin. And then I want you to come back to me so that I can answer the question from the perspective of you having some concept that I believe you need to have in order for us to do a deeper dive, right? So one of those things in the movie that James Baldwin talks about, and I'm going to come back to this thing around George Floyd and Derek Chauvin, and even when we began to have the conversation about what it is I wanted to talk about, we ended up on a conversation of amends, which I think is part of this process here between people of color and not people of color here in America, right? And that's what it was that I was basically talking about. But in the movie, James Baldwin says this thing that I find very powerful. He says a number of things. One of them is the first one for me that struck me was that there's a conversation of where him and Lorraine Hansberry go to meet with Bobby Kennedy, and they're talking about him speaking to his brother, the president at the time, President Kennedy, to stand up and walk with the young black children who are integrating the schools, because she says that if you walk with them, and people begin to spit at you, it will become very apparent that they're not just spitting at you, but they are actually spitting on America, right? And so Bobby Kennedy says, that's an empty moral gesture. That's what he tells her. And so Lorraine Hansberry says, listen, I'm very concerned. I'm paraphrasing here, you all. I'm very concerned about an America that would produce the image of that white cop standing. She says standing, but when you see the image, he is actually kneeling on that black woman's neck. And that threw me because I was watching this after having watched George Floyd expire and call for his mother and all of these other things that occurred as he begged for his life, right? Mm-hmm. And so in those moments, I said, wow, see, what we know as a community, what we know as a people, what we know as a society, we already know they have already made the reports, the FBI, that the white racist groups have infiltrated the police department. And now they're talking about it because it now threatens who they are. But not at one right. time when they stormed the Capitol, right? They were like, right. oh, my God, these racist organizations are dangerous. They've been dangerous to the institution of democracy all along.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't matter until it began to affect them. So some of my friends are like, oh, he's going to jail. You know, he's going to do this, he's going to do that. They're going to put him in jail. You know, there's all these conversations that are happening behind the scenes. And I'm like, I'm not so sure. Because if they did not put the people who were responsible for sedition in jail, those are their family, their children, who were out there storming the Capitol, who beat policemen to death, all the while saying, we're on your side. I don't believe they're going to allow this man to go to jail. If he goes to jail, he will only go for a very short time, and he'll have community service for the rest of the time. You know? So I think this is because often enough that we forget to hold the police accountable, because the police aren't even supposed to kill the guilty. It's not their job. It's never their job. So I thought about this, and I thought about all of the history of who we are, you know, because James Baldwin continues and he talks about how history is alive. In fact, he believes the word ancestral and daily are synonyms. And I thought this is a very interesting way of perceiving history, because he says we breathe in, we hold our the DNA of our ancestors, we hold the memories of our ancestors, we hold the, you know, it's kind of like the sins of the father being revisited upon the sons, you know, that this thing is a perpetually moving machine in which we have began to incorporate these, non-truths, that's what I want to call them, into the history and the fabric of who America is. For instance, Manifest Destiny. He calls that nothing but less a calculated and deliberate form of genocide that we've made a legend out of in order to be able to live with it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I sat around and I started kind of listening to him and thinking about what it was that actually needs to happen, and then we began having our conversation about the definition of amends. Right. I was like, okay, how are you defining amends? You know, it led to a definition of amends. I realized that is what needs to happen in order for some healing to occur between us. There has to be amends. And white people have to trade in their agreement to be white, because that's a political construct, that's a power construct, to become human beings, the Italian Americans and the Greek Americans and what have you, you know, in order to be able to heal what has existed here in our society, in our communities. And that amends can't happen because you have to acknowledge why you needed to create a Negro to begin with. And I'm using the nice term. Right?
And people have to understand that an amends is so much greater than an apology.
Yeah, right. You know, I didn't, when we had that conversation, I said, okay, tell me the difference between an apology and amends. And you said, amends means you will not ever do it again.
Right. You're making a grand change.
Right. But how can you make a grand change if the very nature of who you are depends on the oppression of another?
Now, can I say something?
Go ahead.
You're absolutely right. Because
Our issues are in our tissues, and it's locked in our DNA from the time we were born. Those issues are in our tissues. So you're absolutely right.
So when what we're really talking about, when we talk about amends, when we talk about that ninth step, right? We're actually looking at the world as having been used as the agent to anesthetize white culture against their own injuries. You understand what I mean? So how are we going to do that? How are we going to get there? If you, because I work in an office where they allowed another woman to use the N-word so frequently that it was common before I got there. No one challenged her, although all of them consider themselves enlightened, liberal, whatever, what have you, spiritual warriors, whatever. None of them challenged her. How do you collude every day needs to be the question to continue the perpetuation of these things that have been happening to people of color. Even the other people of color who arrive from different countries. So I've had to deal with Dominicans and Guyanese and what have you tell me about how poorly African Americans behave. And then I back up and I say, how did you get here? And they're like, what do you mean? I said, were you born here? They're like, no. I'm a naturalized citizen. Okay, tell me about that process. And they're like, well, I have to come in. I have to apply for this. I get my green card. You know, they're telling me the process of it. And I'm like, no. I want you to tell me about the historical points that led to you being able to be here as a naturalized citizen. They can't tell me. I said, okay. Did you know that you would not have been able to be here had not a black slave sued for his citizenship in the Supreme Court? Dred Scott lost, but that started the Civil War, basically. It agitated things that brought the Civil War to a head that led to the 14th Amendment, where they say that people have a right, there's a road of citizenship, a path of citizenship, because before they wouldn't allow slaves and the descendants of slaves to be able to be full citizens in America, and I say that they still don't. That's why they can kill us with impunity. So I said to my counterparts at work, what you have essentially said to this woman who uses the N-word on a regular basis until I arrived was not that you did not agree or disagree with her. You've told her in essence that I have the problem with her, and that's why you're correcting the behavior. People have said to me over and over again, well, after the election, I am so happy that Biden is there, and I bet you are breathing so much more comfortably here in America. Because, you know, I just want you to know that not all of them are bad. I have some good, I know some good people. I said, what are they saying to me? And then I have to walk away, and they're like, oh, okay, they're saying that they know some good people who are Trump supporters. And so I came back with, you, who are you good for? If you align yourself with those who are evil or those who are not good, however you want to say it, are you good? The question. It doesn't matter. If I align myself with someone who's evil, if I align myself with someone who does malicious things, if I align myself with someone who is not good, then I take, that's why they say birds of a feather flock together, right? Then I take on the karma of those that I align myself with. So how do you make amends in a country where you continuously align yourself with institutions that are designed to destroy people that you depend on as a commodity? How do you make amends? Well, some of my friends have been this conversation about reparations. Some of the other Caucasians that we're around, they say, oh, that's a hot button topic. You shouldn't mention it. I said you gave reparations to the slave owners. For every slave that they had, that they freed during the Civil War conflict, when it was over, they paid those white slave owners. I said, okay, how about, I don't care what you call it. You don't have to call it reparations. You can call it 400 years of theft of labor and add the interest on that. I don't care what you call it.
And give it to their heirs.
And give it to their heirs. Because guess what? My ancestors aren't here to stand in stead, but I'm here. And I was like, you want to keep telling me how far away slavery was, but guess what? My dad was born in 1917, and his mother was born 47 years before him. So you are just talking about my grandmother. That's not far away. We should never have to pay for school here. We should never have to pay for housing here. We should never have to pay for health care here. Not ever. They could have brought in the Marshall Plan. You know, and people are upset. They're like, well, everybody that comes through, well, they pulled themselves up by the bootstraps. On a legacy built on the backs and out of the blood of my ancestors. You could have never become the great world power that you became economically if it were not for the free labor that you wrung out of the bodies of my ancestors. So when I sit around and I hear, I haven't even watched The Tribes, first of all.
Neither have I.
Derek Chauvin. I haven't watched it. I don't want you to break my heart again. No one understands what it's like to move through this world with the soul breaks that we have to as people of color. How courageous we must be to face the world knowing that our countrymen are our enemies. Now, not all, it's true, but the election proved that one out of two people that we come in contact with,
Ada,
hate us. So that means if we go into an area where we know no one and two people come towards us, to remain safe, we must assume that both of them hate us. The assumption is they're constantly riding us. Now, James Baldwin has said some things. This was in, I'm trying to remember which one, because I read The Fire Next Time. And then there's the one, I'm trying to remember the name of it now, that deals with the Atlanta murders of the children. Oh, my goodness, I don't know why I draw a blank, but he is talking about how if you describe a person or a group of people as leftists or terrorists, that's what they did to the Black Panthers, that's what they did to SNCC, which I think is funny, right? That's what they did to Martin Luther King, that's what they did, on and on and on, right? Mm-hmm. When you do that, you dismiss their claim for human attention. Okay? I'm going down here to get the book because for some reason my mind has gone blank. And in dismissing their claim for human attention, you dismiss your obligation to acknowledge their humanity. That's me putting that on the end. The Evidence of Things Not Seen is the name of the book. And so for me and for some of the people that I speak to, when we talk about, okay, you don't want us here. Our ancestors didn't want to be here, but were forced to stay. But if we left, you would experience the collapse of the American economy as you know it. So if you don't want us here, and some of us don't want to stay, maybe that should be a part of the Marshall Plan, too, and reparations. Those who want to stay, stay, and those who want to go, go. And we give you the money to do it and allow you to run your economy the way that you want to and see how well it goes. But I would just imagine at that point, poor white people will understand that we have more in common with them than we do with the rich. They don't understand that we're one and the same in the eyes of the people who are theists of wealthiest, who control 99% of all the wealth in the world. We both have to go through the back door when we go to their homes. And this is what ended up killing or getting Martin Luther King killed. He started messing with their money. You know.
So, Owl, tell everyone what your show is going to be about when you start having it once a month on the third Sunday.
What I thought I would do is I would talk current events from the lens of people of color. You know, whatever's happening, the housing market from the lens of people of color, economics from the lens of people of color, health issues from the lens of people of color. And we began those conversations around, you know, institutional racism from the lens of people of color and things of that nature moving forward.
That sounds good. And I'm saying that because I want to know if there's anyone out there who has a question or two for Awo, because we're coming close to our time to close, and I do want to read the chapter in, well, the brief reading in the book, Masters of the New Energy, because a lot of people come, they sign on and they want to hear a little bit about that, because this is a fascinating discussion. If you desire to ask our question, what you do is you press 1, and I'll see an indication that you want to talk, and then I'll open your mic. So is there anyone out there that would like to ask our question or two? Well, Arwo, you've evidently satisfied anything they needed to hear or wanted to hear. Oh. So with that, I'm looking forward to you on the third Sunday. I mean, the third Sunday of every month. Before I go to the Masters and the New Energy reading, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Not at this time, no. I don't think so.
Well, I want to thank
Except
you.
Except for that, I just want to make sure that everyone out there stays safe, protect themselves, and do what they need to do to keep a healthy sense of themselves and their family spiritually present at all times. So I'll be saying a little prayer for you.
Thank you. And we'll all be saying a little prayer for you.
Yes, thank you.
You stay blessed. And thank you so much for joining us today.
And thank you for allowing me. It was beautiful.
Oh, we're looking forward to having you every month. Okay? So we just get
okay.
ready.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Sounds good. Take care.
Odabo.
Odabo.
Oh, double. Okay, everyone. That was Ifa Bayo. Olumide Egunbunmi. And you're going to be hearing words of wisdom from her, words from her heart, words from her soul on the third Sunday of every month. Instead of listening to Duchess. Okay, me reading little verses from Adonis St. Germain and the spirit world on the other side. She's going to be giving you your stuff dead up serious day by day and what's happening in the 3D world. So, what do masters and the new energy say about discernment? These masters want us to know that quite simply, the master understands what is theirs and what is not. Because of the interconnection of energy, particularly the interconnection of consciousness between all humans and all things, it is very easy to get caught into the confusion about what is yours and what is not. So often you accept energies that aren't yours at all. You take them in, but it is like taking in the homeless. You give them a place to live. You give them a refuge from the outside. But so often that part or that start to take your energy and they are not your responsibility. They're not your responsibility. They're yours for a short period of time. But if you groom them correctly, you will teach them how to stand up on their own too. Many of you claim thoughts, feelings, and energies that are not yours. Some of the physical pains that you have, those are not yours. You are actually carrying somebody else's physical pain. It is not yours, but you pretend it is. Perhaps you carry it because of some ancestral karma. Didn't we just learn that? Our issues are in our tissues. It's locked and clocked in our DNA. Perhaps it is something in your family line that has been passed down from one to another, and now you carry it. It is not yours, and it actually doesn't look very good on you. So, you know, we're going to have to find that level of peace within ourselves on how we have to deal with these everyday things that we have inherited as ours, but should have never become ours. Perhaps we are simply carrying mass consciousness energy, feeling the energies of the general anxiety of humanity. Perhaps we are carrying around deep depression that doesn't belong to us. We may have inherited it from an aspect of ourselves in a past life, a very depressed aspect. Who is still hanging around us? But now we believe it's ours, just like we believe our past life is ours. It's not an aspect, an expression of our energy, but it is not us. We are different in this lifetime. We are sovereign in this lifetime. We have a connection to our past lifetimes, but they are not us, and we are not them. Sounds quite like this is the topic, and this is the reading for this particular show. And you know, I usually take these readings and I just, you know, pick one up out of the sky, and that's the one that I feel is the reading that is chosen for the day, you know. We tend to take on other people's issues. We don't need to. And a master doesn't want to, because we can't do things to get these energies moving again. We can't help others resolve their issues if we're caught right in the middle of it. We take on the baggage, problems, and energies of others, thinking that we're doing some type of sacrificial service, that we're somehow saving the world. But we're not. We are only burdening ourselves, and then we get frustrated because things aren't working out better for us. So when we think in terms of discernment, we have to realize that anything we choose not to be ours is no longer ours, and it's just a thought and attention and intention that we bring forth within ourselves. Okay? We think, oh, but I have earned this. I was a bad person at some point in my life, or I did something wrong, or, you know, we see all of these things and we embrace all of these things and we want to believe all of these things. You are so bought into all of this that you find all these ways to justify it being yours. The master is discerning and understands they can release anything they choose. Conflicts going on inside yourself, whether physical or mental, you can let them go. Beliefs, feelings, reactions, any of those, whatever you choose is yours. Anything else, let it go. You know, we talk about it's all about intentions. We just have to think, and we make it so, because we are creators of our own reality, and we create these things for ourselves to hold on to ourselves. You know, I've learned a long time ago that with intention, we can change the world. And all we have to do as a collective is intend collectively in order to bring about that change, you know? So I had a person tell me the other day, I was talking about something going on in the lifetime of my experience, and she said, you know, everything tends to work out work itself out in the end. And then she said, so if it hasn't worked itself out, then sweetie, it's not the end. And I have to bear witness to that on many things going on within this universal scheme of things. I want to thank Awo for her sharing. I love her. I'll be happy to see her and hear her on the third Sunday, but of course we'll connect before that happens. Everyone take care. The board is lit up. It looks wonderful. It looks exciting. And I want to thank our guests for spending time with us and hope to see you again on the first Sunday of May. Yeah, time is moving, is it not? And in the words of Awo Odabo.